Welcome to Vicious Whispers with Mark Tullius, your source for horror, sci-fi, suspense, and all things violent.
Thank you so much for joining me today on Vicious Whispers with Mark Tullius. Today we have episode 246. It's been about 2 weeks since I recorded one. Wasn't sure if I was going to do it. Thought about doing it yesterday, but didn't get around to it. Today's been interesting. So I just started some new medication because my brain is... Actually, I shouldn't say fucked. Let's say screwed. No, let's not say that either because I'm going to repair it. So my brain isn't in the ideal place. I went to the Amen Clinic. I wrote about them in TBI or CTE. Dr. Amen is one of the leading brain health specialists in the world. Love his books. I talked about his book. I talked about the studies he did on cannabis. And I also said I wasn't going to listen to him because I felt like I needed cannabis. I thought it probably wasn't that bad. Yes, it ages the brain more than alcohol. But I was like, fuck it, because I need it. That's just been my attitude. But I had been having a couple depressive episodes. Those could be kind of scary, you know, depression, rage. It's just a lot of anxiety, a lot of hard time controlling emotions, right? So it's like, no, I don't want that to happen anymore. I need to take a look at my brain. I've already spent so much money and time looking at it, so I was a little hesitant to do that. But yeah, I realized I owed it to my family. That's something that really stuck with me in my book, TBI or CTE. I spent a lot of time talking about my friend Michael Poorman, who I played football with at Brown University, spent time with his family before he died. He was dying of, I believe, leukemia, and it's because he couldn't fight it because of his brain health issue. But one of the conversations I had in his kitchen with Michael wasn't there, but three of my other friends from Brown were there. We were talking about problems. I was informing them, letting them know kind of like what the deal is and, you know, some of the concerns. And they were kind of scared. Like someone were saying like, I think I'd rather not know, blah, blah, blah. And Michael's wife, Sarah, said, hey, you guys owe it to your families, owe it to yourself, but also owe it to your families to, you know, take care of this, to get it looked at. And so that was one of the things I was thinking about when I signed up for the Amen Clinic. My wife, my niece, they've had great results there. So I was like, okay, I'll go and do it. Absolutely loved everyone there. All the testing was awesome. Everyone I talked to was awesome. Went in and did the SPECT scans, which is looking at the blood volume in different areas of the brain and also brain activity. Now, it's time to meet the psychiatrist. It's a Zoom call, and he seems pretty concerned. He doesn't want to give me the news. And so it's pretty much me. Like, I was like, dude, I was like, I'm already expecting, you know, it's not going to look good. I've seen the scans of people with 4 years of cannabis use, and I've had 36 with maybe at most 6 months off in that whole time period. Not a lot of time off. And my use is heavy. It could be, you know, I don't know. Fuck. It's a pretty heavy usage. Anyhow, because my tolerance is crazy. It's not like I'm walking around feeling high. It's just cannabis is what I had been using to lower, you know, the anxiety. And then caffeine is what I was using to increase my brain activity. So, you know, kind of a vicious cycle. Both of those are negatives when taken in excess, and especially if you have brain injuries, which I've had a lot of. And I probably still am getting, one of his concerns was me doing jiu-jitsu. He's like, yeah, it's wonderful for your anger, anxiety, all that, overall health, but you're also taking some blows to the head. Sometimes you take an elbow. I've blocked out a couple of times, just real quick, but still don't really need that. Today, I took a someone hit the back of my head. Thank God it was soft. But if they had come back hard, that would have been awful. And I would have been upset about that. But what are you going to do? So not ready to give up jiu-jitsu. But after talking with them, I decided to say, yeah. And I had already had this thought going in. I was like, okay, if it's not good news, then I will go ahead and start lowering my cannabis use. Not a big deal. I've been the poster child for cannabis and love it and blah, 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 blah. But I'm okay changing my stance. You know, I was like, okay, I'm looking at this information, seeing the brain scans, not fun. But yeah, so when he tells me, he's like, dude, I've been looking at brain scans for 20 years and this is not good. He's like, we're the same age and this is not good. So yeah, that's what I was dealing with. But he's very surprised at just how well my cognition is. All my ability to think, awesome. It's emotional regulation that is a big problem. And as far as the cognition goes, and the front of my brain being in such great shape. He was surprised by that. I was like, well, I'm not surprised because I did all that neurofeedback. I did a ton of neurofeedback. That's the area that we worked on. We worked on my sleep. All that has been so beneficial. And he said, yeah, because the neurofeedback is one of the things that he recommended that I continue to do. So I will be picking that up. Also, hyperbaric oxygen chamber. I've already started that. So I told him, I was like, whatever you guys recommend, I'm doing. So cutting out cannabis the last couple of days, I had barely any. He didn't want me to stop cold turkey, but I just don't need it. So yeah, just small amounts at night, just to chill a little bit. We'll see. Pretty sure that's going to continue. They got me on this medication. GABA is supposed to help lower anxiety. Not feeling the best with it. I just sent them a message saying, hey, this is what's going on. Having a little bit of trouble concentrating. That alone is enough for me. Like, I need to write. I need to be able to think. I need to be able to sit at my computer and do my stuff. And my anxiety isn't that bad. I'm able to deal with it bad so much. You know, I was telling him, I was like, I'm very reflective. I have an incredible support system. I have my wife. I have my family. I have my friends. I have so many readers that reach out to me that, you know, I have messages back and forth with. So that's awesome. I have jiu-jitsu. I have my jiu-jitsu team. Today, I think there were probably over 10 people with the Try Not to Die rash guards on for Try Not to Die Fridays. So that's pretty amazing. So all that is wonderful. Yeah, we'll see whether or not I continue this medication, whether or not it's going to help that much. It's a really low dose, but I also don't like, you know, it's causing a little bit of trembling in my hands. I was like, I don't want motherfuckers thinking I'm scared. And what else is there? But, oh, and the sleep has been terrible. But again, that might be because of the decrease in the cannabis. So today I was up at pretty much from 3 o'clock on, I was up this morning. I was answering emails by 3:30, but I got a lot of stuff done. Getting my German books in order. Just brought on another Try Not to Die third co-author. That's going to be awesome. I don't know if I talked about it last time, but we also have, man, I have way too many Try Not to Dies, but I fucking love it. I love how excited these people are getting about it. They love the idea. And that's the kind of motivation I need. I was like, there's no shortage of motivation for me to stay positive, to keep moving, to keep creating, to do all that. And that's one of the things I make sure to tell my co-authors, you know, before we sign a contract, like, hey, you're going to see that, you know, if you see my post or whatever else, you might be a little bit worried. It's like, oh, this motherfucker's got CTE. He's going to go out in a bad way and blah, 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 blah. No, I'm not. So I've already made that commitment. That's not happening. I'm doing great. The Amen Clinic scans with just to make sure, you know, it's like 90, 95% of the time, I'm fucking cool. Yeah, maybe my anxiety is a little bit high, but I deal with it or I avoid areas that are going to make it worse. You know, it's just that 5% that I do not want to risk. I don't want to fall back into any depressive type episodes, rage episodes, lose my shit type episodes. So there is that. But yeah, so feeling good. What else? I already started the hyperbaric oxygen chamber, doing a soft chamber instead of the hard chamber. It's a little easier on you. It's not as intense. You have to go more times, but that's okay. So I have to drive all the way to Costa Mesa for that, which is like an hour in traffic. But what's super cool is it is like 5 minutes away from 10th Planet Costa Mesa, where Coach Wes, who I train with in the mornings, he also teaches over there at 11. So now, instead of waking up at 6 a.m., I just go to Costa Mesa. This week, I did it twice, and then Friday at Whittier. Next week, I have 3 sessions in Costa Mesa, so I will hit those 3 classes, and then I'll do 1 or 2 days in Whittier, depending on how my body feels. But definitely on Fridays, because that's fun. Yeah, today was just a brutal workout, the hardest workout we've done this whole year, at least with Coach Wes, but I loved it. And now, in about an hour, he'll be over, maybe less than an hour, and we will be working on our tournament of, I don't know what it's called, maybe death. I don't know. We're going to come up with the perfect name for it. We're also designing a cool-ass rash guard. Today, I just put out something asking for an artist that can create all, I don't know, 8 to 16 characters. We're going to make some cool cards with them, all that kind of stuff. So a lot of fun stuff ahead of me. I really look forward to Fridays, being able to create like that, being able to hang out. And it's also an extra huge bonus that Jake loves Coach Wes, and that makes him excited to come home from school. So what else do we got going on? So we got my brain damage. Oh, Emily Haynes was asking about what do we do for our brain, you know, to help it. And this is, you know, this has always been kind of hard for me. It's like, man, I'm incredibly fortunate that I'm able to do these things. Sometimes I don't even like talking about it. I was like, fuck, man, I know there's so many people that can't, you know, they don't can't afford to do it. And maybe they don't even know about these options, but it could be get pricey. But the things that have been helping my cognition, in addition to the neurofeedback, of course, that helped probably the most, but it's because I play guitar every day. I don't play guitar every day, but I started picking that up again. That works the brain. Do Duolingo every single day. Been doing that for the last almost 700 days. And before that, it was like a short break and another 300 days. So that's something that I'm doing constantly. Every day, I'm also listening to German heavy metal. So I can process that and try to work on it a little bit. So trying to work the brain in different ways. And I think that has been definitely a huge help for me. Something I encourage. Yeah, learning music, learning languages. Those are things that are great for you. So what else is there? And jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu is also wonderful because you have to really think about these moves. You're always thinking, you're always trying to figure something out. That's one of the reasons why I like it so much. Jiu-jitsu at Costa Mesa is a little bit different than jiu-jitsu at Whittier because the guys at Costa Mesa are more advanced. They've been doing it longer. There are higher belts there, and there are some very good higher belts. I was getting smashed by Andre. And again, it's awesome. I love that. I love the challenge. I don't have to win every round. I don't want to win every round. I want to go against guys that are going to beat me so I can train really hard to try to get them or so they don't get me as often. And there's also a brown belt there, Mike. That was incredible. So being able to train with those guys, plus I know there's so many more over there that I'll get to meet and work with. That's very cool. You know, in Whittier, I'm the brown belt. I'm one of the bigger fish in a small pond over in Costa Mesa. Yeah, I'm going to work my way up there. So again, and I'm older, so I don't have to be that great. That's what's kind of nice too. It's like, yeah, I'm a brown belt, but I'm also kind of fucking broken. And I took off so long, so I'm getting back into it. And I'm a newer brown belt, so I got tons of excuses. And I use them like crazy because, yeah, it's not fun getting tapped. But, or it could be, like it's all on your attitude. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about training with Coach Wes over there and then over here on Whittier. So having the two different gyms, that's pretty cool. Not going to worry about traffic. I'm not going to worry about the drive. I will use that time to talk to friends or listen to podcasts in different languages or whatever it is. So I'll be productive in that time. One of the cool things about doing the hyperbaric is you could bring your writing. I brought my writing in. So I'm editing Trench Die in Arcranium while getting this oxygen. You know, I have to be in there for an hour. So I was like, shit, a very productive hour. That's awesome. I love it. I could have brought my phone in too, but I was like, no, I'm going to leave my phone outside. She was surprised by this because I believe most people probably take their phone in. I was like, no, I want to write. I want to concentrate and then just meditate and relax. So that was super good. I'm 80 pages into Trench Die in Arcranium. Just the first read through and light edit, then I'll have to go in for the heavy edit, and that will take a while. But that one's cool. That one would be nice to get done. Also, just finished Trench Die in a Dark Fairy Tale. Went over P.W. Foyt's. He was the editor on that one and went over all his changes. He did an amazing job with it. I fucking love what he did with it. He addressed all my concerns, found other stuff to fix up. Evan's going through those changes now. He's going to add to it. He'll give it back to me. I'll make my changes, then I will give it to Lindsay Smith for the final edit, and then we'll have that out. That should be out by June 4th. /tag, Trench Die on /tag. Paperback is out now. I do not have the real copy. This one still has a bullshit streak, not for resale. But those copies will be in on Wednesday. If you've ordered it on Amazon, you probably got your real copy before I got mine. I think that's bullshit, but whatever. I'll let it slide this time. But I'm excited about getting those copies. Also excited about taking John all of the cool things we got. We got coasters. We have Try Not to Die. I Died on /tag pins. We have some I Died on /tag stickers. We have all kinds of cool shit. Made a bunch of new bookmarks and stuff. And this is all through Sticker Mule, who I love. And they also put a huge Try Not to Die sign up on my wall. So every time I walk in here, that's what I see. Gets me pumped up. That's all I need. Looks just like this guy on my chest. I have to go back in 2 weeks about 2 weeks or so to get him finished up. I have to do more color on my chest on the tattoo. And then I'm also going to fix up. It's the same artist who did Death Fest. And so he's going to fix that one up too. Just put, you know, saturate the color and all that. So all kinds of exciting shit. Two other things I want to do real quick before Wes gets here. All my books, just about all my books are wide, and I'm going to be selling them direct as well. And the direct ones will be probably about half the price of what you're going to spend on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, Apple, whatever. If you do buy books on Apple and all those other platforms, that would be amazing if you could pick it up and leave a review. If you read it before, that'd be amazing to leave reviews, because I have zero reviews on all of my books on every platform except for Amazon, just about, because I've been on Amazon forever because it's easy and I'm all about easy. But over the last month or 2 months or however long, I've slowly been making changes in the books, slowly been transferring them over. This next step is getting them up for direct so everyone could get them really cheap. I think the first five Try Not to Dies plus number 8 are now wide or in the process of going wide. And all that will be up on my website, hopefully in a week. Yeah, that should be what happens. Releasing Try Not to Die at Death Fest and Death Fest Confessions next week in German. So have the covers, have everything done. That's awesome. Got the cover for Try Not to Die in Brownsville with Jay Bauer. That's going on. And just crazy how big Try Not to Die is getting. Oh, also yesterday, I just happened to see Jay Bauer. Saw a post of his about going to AuthorCon 4 in St. Louis. There are only so many more tables left. So I said, you know what? Fuck it. Let's do it. I didn't talk to my wife because I also saw there was a cancellation policy if I need to. I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to get a table and go for it. So that makes 4 different events I will be going to this year. That also says a lot about where I am as far as anxiety. I don't know. I used to get anxiety about those kinds of things, but man, especially after going to Germany and doing the Book Mesa, that's the biggest one in the world. Fucking loved it nonstop. Not like I didn't stop talking to people the entire day. One day I didn't even leave my booth, and it was incredible. So, and that's speaking German half the time. So I'm cool with doing these things. I'm excited to be meeting all these different readers and all these different authors. This will be my first time meeting some of these co-authors of mine in person. So I know Duncan Ralston will be at Books and Brew in Chicago. We're hitting that one. I think that's August 3rd. Doing one in Knoxville, Tennessee, sometime in September. Also doing, I forget the dates, but I'm also doing one in Connecticut the week before Chicago. And then AuthorCon, I think, is October 4th. So very busy. I don't know who will be with me. The whole family will be going to the Chicago one. My son will be going with me to the Connecticut one. Him and my buddy's friend, Luca, are actually going to be doing a little jiu-jitsu demonstration. So that'll be a lot of fun, talking about TBI, talking about jiu-jitsu for domestic abuse victims. Last thing I want to talk about, I recently just put up something about barter for a book. Like, send me your art. If you want to send me a piece of art, personal art, in exchange for a signed book, if you live in the US, that is amazing. I do have one going out to someone special in Australia. That's a special thing because it costs a lot of money, but she's also sending me something too. So that's pretty cool. It's just, I never have anything to look forward to, right? I'm the one always sending books and I get nothing in return. All I get here are bills, which I don't even really look at. My wife handles all that. But it'd be nice to get stuff. I did receive a package from Emily Haynes. She was the first person to do this. She's been so supportive. Always the nicest messages. Always sharing, always reviewing, just super cool. And her family sent us some really cool stuff, some really cool 3D printed pieces. Her son sent me a piece of art that's up on my wall. That's what I'll be doing with all of them. Because again, man, this is what it's all about. It's all about the connections. I just want to be a positive person, making a positive impact on other people, letting them know how much they affect me as well. A lot of people think that they're not shit, you know? Some people put authors on a pedestal too. So like, you know, they're surprised if I even write back to them. I was like, this is a regular fucking person. So it's always really cool to be like, yeah, you know what? Maybe I did brighten your day with a message or whatever else. I was like, but your message did that same exact thing to me. You know, we're all people. We all have those types of emotions. And so, yeah, whoever you are, you can turn someone's day around just by doing something positive for them, saying something nice, smiling at them. Fuck, who knows what it is. But enough with all this happy shit, right? I got to go. I'm going to leave you guys with a horror story. I don't know which one. It's going to be a surprise. I think we do something off of Untold Mayhem, but we shall see. we'll see how I feel when I edit this later tonight and share it in the newsletter tomorrow. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. Hope you have an amazing week, and I will talk to you later. Peace.
Left unfinished. A soft scraping sound pulled Robert from his nightmare a little after 3 a.m. If he was lucky, he would catch a few more hours of sleep before the long day ahead. The novel had to be in Marty's hands by 8 that night, and Robert wanted to proofread it one last time. Robert closed his eyes and pulled the comforter to his chin. The metallic scraping returned, louder and longer this time. It sounded as if it were coming from inside the house. From inside his room. The silhouette of a man appeared at the foot of his bed. A very large man. And the man was drawing something across the metal crossbar, just inches from his feet. This was still a nightmare. Everything seemed so real, but Robert must have fallen back to sleep without realizing it. Either that, or he never woke the first time. It was just a realistic dream. Robert's eyes adjusted to the darkness, and he realized it was the same guy from his nightmare, and he was dragging a straight-edge razor against the bed frame. No one used those kinds of razors anymore. Further evidence that this had to be a dream. The scraping stopped, and the man grasped the bottom of the comforter and tossed it onto the floor. The breeze from the open window blew across Robert's feet. If this were one of his novels, the hero would whip out a gun. But Robert was too petrified to even move. The man grabbed Robert's foot and held it against his side, brought the razor beside it. Robert clapped his hands and the bedroom lights flashed on. This couldn't be. The man didn't have a face, at least not a real one. Besides the black goatee and flattened nose, the rest of the bald man's features were not fully formed. The man's ears were large lumps with no real shape. His eyes were round and black, but dull and void of life. Instead of lips between the mustache and chin, there was only skin. "Wake, damn it!" Robert screamed. "Wake!" The man squeezed his ankle harder, set the razor against the top of Robert's foot. Robert tried to yank his foot back, but the mouthless man had it in a vice grip. The razor bit into the top of his foot, slicing through the skin and veins, riding across the bone. The pain was so clear and brilliant, Robert rifled his free foot on the man's hand, knocking it away, but not freeing the razor. The bald giant held up a fist, a mass of flesh fused around the razor's handle. No thumb, no fingers, no knuckles. It was the right size and color of a fist, but it lacked all detail, unlike the shiny razor, which was identical to the weapon wielded by the villain from Robert's novel. Robert continued to fight, but even with the blood lubricating his ankle, he couldn't pull free. Red-hot pain ripped through his foot as the bastard tore open another gash. The creature's face couldn't show emotion, but Robert knew the son of a bitch loved every second. The man finally let Robert's leg fall. Robert had never experienced such pain. Part of him wanted to die, to surrender. But then he noticed the attacker's left hand. It had only one finger, the ring finger, and it had an intricately designed titanium wedding ring wrapped around it. He had a very bad feeling he knew what was inscribed inside it. Looking the killer in his blank eyes, Robert said, "Larry, with this ring, I give you my soul. Forever yours, Veronica." The man nodded, and if he'd had lips, Robert was sure they would have spread in a grin. Jesus Christ, it couldn't be Larry. Larry didn't exist, but neither did people who were missing mouths. The man pulled the black turtleneck over his shaved head. The South Side slasher always killed with his shirt off. He loved the feel of warm blood spraying onto his skin. And there they were, his tattoos, the snake wrapped around his left arm, and the demonic skull on his right. Robert had drawn those tattoos himself, and here they were, in the flesh. The sleeve of the turtleneck got caught on the fist with the razor in it. Robert slid off the bed, nearly passing out from the pain when his injured foot hit the floor. Hopping on his good foot, Robert reached the bathroom as a muffled scream came from behind. He glanced over his shoulder and saw Larry tear the turtleneck in half as he howled, the skin covering his mouth, muting the sound. Robert slammed the door closed behind him and threw the lock a second before Larry crashed into it. Robert slid down against the door and grabbed the towels lying on the floor. He had already lost a lot of blood and couldn't last much longer if he kept gushing. With the handle rattling back and forth above his head, Robert made a quick tourniquet with one towel and wrapped two others around his wounds. He needed to get to a hospital. The handle stopped turning, and heavy footsteps left the room. There was only one door in the bathroom, and Robert couldn't fit through the sliver of a window, even if he had been 100 pounds lighter. He was stuck in here, and his cell phone was beside the bed. The closest neighbor was over a block away. He was screwed. With his ear to the door, Robert could hear noise coming from one of the rooms. He had hoped against hope that Larry was leaving, but he knew better than that. He knew Larry better than anyone did. This guy was the definition of evil. When Robert had created the serial killer, he had worried the character wouldn't be believable. Sure, there were psychos and sociopaths that did some really outrageous shit, but Larry lived to take lives. He loved inflicting pain. Robert had been afraid he had made the guy too sadistic, too over the top. But his agent convinced him it would sell. Larry would make a figurative killing. There was a loud grunt and the thump of footsteps heading toward the bedroom. He must have found something to open the door. What could Robert do? He had no weapons in here. He couldn't get away. He was helpless. Why was Larry after him in the first place? Robert had created the maniac. He had given him life. Larry survived at the end of the novel. There was the possibility of a sequel. Why would he come after his creator? And why was he deformed? The footsteps stopped outside the door. Robert held his breath and waited. A thundering kick slammed into the door, knocking Robert toward the toilet. The door bounced off the bathroom wall and back into the frame. The door thrust open. Larry stepped into the bathroom and set Robert's laptop at his feet. On his way out of the bathroom, Larry ripped the bathroom door off its hinges and threw it onto the bed. He grabbed the chair at the desk and plopped down on it outside the bathroom. The only reason Larry wouldn't kill someone would be because he wanted something. He wanted something from Robert, and it had something to do with the book. Robert turned on the computer and opened the document, trying to block out the mind-numbing pain and concentrate on the story. What was there not to be happy with? Larry didn't die. He satisfied every vile urge he felt, 4 times alone in one chapter. The ladies found him attractive and charming. Attractive? This guy wasn't attractive. Robert looked up and studied Larry. He could be attractive if he weren't missing parts, if he weren't deformed. That was it. It wasn't that Larry was deformed. He wasn't described. Robert had thought he had described him to a T, but looking back, he realized he may have rushed over some difficult spots and cut a few corners. Description had never been a strong point. Unless, of course, he was describing a maggot-infested wound or the slow-motion bludgeoning of an old woman. Flowery descriptions were for the literary novelists. They could spend pages describing someone's eyes. He would mention the blonde's eyes were blue and rush to the good part where she was being ravaged by the madman. You want to be whole? Larry grunted with a nod. Robert searched for the first mention of the maniac. I guess step one should be give you a mouth. There was a weak paragraph where Robert added a short sentence describing Larry's razor-thin lips that complemented his sharp tongue.
God damn it, Bobby. It's about fucking time, he said in a girlish whisper.
Robert stared at the hulking beast.
Fix it,
Larry shrieked. Robert rushed to Larry's first kill and began typing. He'd always pictured the man with a rough, gravelly voice.
Let's see, Larry growled. Much better, Bobby boy.
It's Robert,
Larry pointed the bloody razor at him. It's whatever the fuck I decided is, Bobby boy.
Sorry.
Should be. You know this is the first goddamn time I've talked.
No way, he said. Still in disbelief, he could be having this conversation. You're the main character.
And I talked to myself the whole time. Find me a place where I'm in quotes.
Larry teased his nipple with the tip of the razor.
What's that, smart guy? Can't find one? Didn't think so. Now how about some goddamn fingers?
Robert found the perfect spot to add the details. When he looked up from the computer, Larry flexed his fingers around the razor, the muscles rippling through his forearm.
And my name? What the fuck is up with that? Lawrence. Larry. That's some gay shit. I need something tougher than that.
Robert sighed. I gave you a good name. You're a regular guy. Your coworkers, your wife, your friends. They don't know you're a sadistic prick. You need a regular guy's name. Larry tossed the razor into the air and caught it in his other hand.
I've never taken a life with my left. Don't make yours be the first.
What name do you want?
You're the writer.
Robert didn't need to look up to know Larry was smirking. The asshole loved this. He didn't care that Robert hurt so much he could barely think. How about Jack or Derek?
How about no? Damien, that's cool. Something like that.
Robert shrugged and did a quick find and replace. Real original, he mumbled, as he changed the name more than 300 times with the push of one button.
Now hurry up and fix the rest of me. Some decent ears would be nice.
Robert always hated critics. And Larry, Damien, was getting on his last nerve. He tried not to smile as he described the necrotic ears barely attached to the man's skull.
Hey, dickhead!
Robert ignored him and continued to type, giving Damien slanted eyes.
There's a fucking mirror right behind you. Fix this shit, or I'm gonna fuck you up real bad. What I did to Mary will seem like a Sunday school lesson compared to what I do to you. And you know I can make you last as long as I want.
A shiver ripped through Robert's body. He had created a master of disaster, a doctor of pain. Damien thrived on torture, keeping his victims alive and conscious for every single ounce of fun. Robert deleted his last sentence and watched Damien's eyes and ears return to their former state. He thought back to Mary's scene where Damien's actions had made her think he would let her live if she satisfied him. That possibility never entered Damien's mind. He never let anyone live. He gave them false hope to make their anguish just that much more beautiful. He wasn't going to let Robert live. As soon as he was finished, so was Robert.
Good job, Bobby boy. Now I'll be a real lady killer.
Robert set the laptop on the counter and pushed himself onto the toilet.
Got a shit? I think you can hold it.
I'm trying to get comfortable.
Robert put the computer back onto his lap. He had a plan, and he hoped to hell it would work. If it did, he'd escape with his life and his story.
Just hurry up. I got places to go and people to kill.
I'm sure you do, Robert said, as he positioned the cursor. He erased the hand description and heard the razor clatter to the floor.
What the hell?
Damien growled, unable to pick up the weapon with either hand. As calm as possible, Robert said, Wait a second. I'm trying to fix you up. I've got to turn this in tomorrow, and we need you in tip-top shape.
Hurry up,
he said with a hint of nervousness in his voice. Not a problem. Robert added a word to Damien's description. Damien yelled,
Put the lights back on! What the fuck? What the fuck do you do?
Robert exploded off the toilet and squeezed out the doorway, putting as little weight as possible on his ruined foot. He felt Damien reach for him, but the maniac's one finger wasn't strong enough to grab hold.
You asshole! I'm blind!
He screamed as he shot out of the chair and lumbered after Robert. Robert was opening the bedroom door when Damien got hold of him and slammed him into the wall. Robert fell to the floor and wrapped his arms around Damien's legs, trying to knock the man down. Damien, who hadn't lost his skills as a collegiate wrestler, sprawled and crushed Robert beneath him. Keeping his weight pressed firmly against Robert's back, Damien said,
Fix it now, or I swear to God, I'll club you to death. Don't think I can't. I could choke you out right now if I wanted to, he said,
as he slipped an arm around Robert's neck.
Give me back my fucking eyes!
The laptop's under me.
Damien used his free hand to feel for the computer. He slid to Robert's side, keeping his arm around the man's throat.
Do it!
Robert had one shot left, but it meant destroying an entire year's work. He'd be throwing away more than just a huge paycheck and a lifetime worth of royalties. He'd be destroying his baby, a piece of himself. Oh, but it had to be. It was the only way. Damien tightened his grip.
What the hell's taking so long?
I'm finding my spot.
White spots danced in front of Robert's eyes. He right-clicked the file and hit delete.
By the way, Damien, what were you going to carve on my stomach?
He gasped, while the computer asked if he was really sure he wanted to delete the file.
Fix me, and maybe I won't.
Robert knew that the man would. The madman carved epithets on every victim. He thought human flesh made a wonderful canvas, no better medium than a body. But it wouldn't be Robert's body, not today. Robert hit OK, and Larry's arm pulled away from his neck. Robert took a breath and sat up. Larry was standing, looking down at him. His mouth was missing, and the razor had magically found its way into the lump of his right hand. The file was still sitting in the recycle bin. Robert lifted the laptop into the air and brought it crashing down onto the floor. The computer was in pieces. The file was gone. Larry destroyed. But he wasn't. Larry didn't have a mouth, and his eyes didn't show any emotion. But Robert knew the bastard was smiling. In the lump of his right hand was the razor. In his other hand, pinched between his one finger and palm, was Robert's yellow backup flash drive.